Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Cover, hosted here by myself, John Robb, and Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing great. Hope you're doing well.
I am doing well. I was looking at the calendar, could not believe it's been 2 weeks since we have Steve Hamilton on. I don't know where the time is going. I'm essentially lost. I have no clue what the hell is going on.
He hit the New York Times list
back
with his book.
Who? Steve
hit
did?
The New York Times list with his book. That's the first time he's
of
done
it. Of course,
that, so.
because we had him on the air and everybody listened to our show.
Exactly.
Tonight's show we got on is author Sandra Brannon, and she is the author. I think she has 6 books out now. Jacob Descent, I believe, was the last one that just came out. And Sandra's on here not only to talk about her books, but there's a couple other things that we're going to get into. This is going to be an emotionally charged interview. Just want to let people know. And we're thankful so much that Sandra is coming on to talk about some of the things that have happened and, of course, her latest book, Jacob's Descent. So let's bring her on right now. Sandra, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
How are you doing?
I've had better days, but I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Speaking of better days, why don't we just, like we said, Jacob's Descent was your latest book. But before we kind of get into that, I guess let's talk about the better days and the tragedy that struck you. I think it was, 2 months ago that this happened, just about 2 months ago?
Actually, it was just a month, yeah.
It was a month ago. See, time is so past me right now. I didn't even know it was 2 weeks that we had Steve Hamilton on. But your son, you know what? I'll let you say it because you go right ahead. Say it.
Sure.
Maybe
it's healing that I can talk out loud about it. But, you know, John and Jeff, you've been good friends of mine for a long time, but I'm sure you didn't know that I rarely talk about my kids. And the reason I don't is because, now I'm going to lose it. But
except for your handsome son that's at Thriller Fest every year, and I think Kathleen Antrim's daughter, I think they kind of like each other. I'm not going to lie there.
I wonder, those two, actually, my youngest is Joe, and he's adopted from Vietnam, and I love him to pieces, but he actually was adopted because I had lost my youngest son. And I just didn't want to end it there. A doctor had made a mistake, and it took his life. So I never talk about that because that was, you know, Joe's 21 now, and that was 23 years ago. So I never talked about it then, and I still haven't talked about it much now because, you know, mistakes happen, but, you know, people like me have to live with them for the rest of my life. And, you know, I understand mistakes, but that's tough. Now, a month ago, I had another son that hanged himself. He had suffered from depression his entire life. I wasn't blessed with him until he turned 12, and he's my stepson, but I feel like I've raised him along with my other two. And he battled to the very end, but, you know, depression won out at the end, and that's a tough thing to have to deal with. So I'm not staying quiet on this one because anybody that suffers with depression needs to understand that, you know, there are other options. There are way more ways out of self-loathing than suicide. So I'm being pretty outspoken this time around because I was very quiet the first time around. So I just don't want to lose another son. I don't want another mother to lose another daughter or son ever. It's just not something any of us should ever have to go through. Thank you for thinking of it. He actually, only my luck, and Ryan's laughing at me now. Ryan was my son that hanged himself, but he actually it was on 420, which is even funnier because it's like that would have been funny to him in hindsight. So, anyway, he was a good spirit, a really, really fiery spirit, and a very wonderful, wonderful personality. He really wanted to change the world, and he did. He changed my world for sure. And he left behind our grandson is 2.5 years old, almost 3. So we're kind of battling with the aftermath, but we already miss him terribly. And that's a tough awesome. Tragedy. So I'm sorry to start up off on a downer, but that's thank you for all the love that you've shown.
No, not at all.
Is there anything we have listeners who might have children or loved ones who are suffering similar? What can they do?
You know, I don't have all the answers for sure because, you know, he was almost 29 years old, and so 16 and a half years we tried to find answers. He went through the dark period where he wore all black, and he went through the period where, you know, he just hated authority and police, and, you know.
Ask, what age was that started happening?
That was pretty early, mid to late teens, I would say. And then
so high school age.
Yeah, exactly. And he actually was homeless. His he wanted to come live with us. We live in South Dakota, and his mom lived in Texas, and he wanted to come live with us right away. And when his mom didn't let him, because we had a lot of rules and we had a lot of structure at our house. But we also have a lot of fun at our house. But I don't blame her. You know, that's tough for a mom to let somebody else, you know, some other mother step in, and I understand that. But he was alone, so he started drinking very young. And he was homeless by the time he graduated from high school. He lived behind a Safeway dumpster. And he did great. It didn't scare him. It didn't bother him. He enjoyed life without responsibility. I don't know how else to put that, but we it's just hard to imagine your son homeless. So we went down that August after he'd lived on the streets for 3 months and scooped him up and got him an eye appointment and teeth appointment and stuck him in college and tried to give him some discipline that way. But, you know, he really gravitated back towards the streets. And so that was hard for me. It's hard to accept when somebody would choose to be homeless when they don't have to be. But it was responsibility was just too much anxiety for him. So I guess the signs for me is just because somebody is different from you, what we learned in the last 5 years is we'd always say, be you, just be you, you know, whatever you do, be you. And he had long dreadlocks, and he loved to live on the beach, and he was a surfer, and he had different colored dreadlocks, so all the kids called him Skittles on the beach, which is wonderful. And then he also was a fire dancer, and he was a brilliant fire dancer. So that help from a parent to say, be you, and if that's what you need to be, then please be you. And he was. So, you know, near the end, the last 2 years of his life, we put him back into a house because he was a father then at that point. And although he believed that the rest of the world could raise a baby on a beach and didn't need diapers, it was still hard for us grandparents to imagine that. So,
right, exactly.
You know, it's just kind of beyond my comprehension, being a South Dakotan, that anybody can live on the street. It's too cold up here. But he was in Texas, so. But anyway, you know, so he, you know, the last couple of years he was in a home, but it wasn't his preference, never was. So it's just, I will tell you, here's the important thing for me that I took away from this. There's no doubt in my mind that Ryan never wanted to hurt anyone, didn't do it as a, you know, flipping the finger to the rest of the world, there was no message there. It was purely his option and the only option he could see in his world. So if the warning signs are there big and bold, and every parent out there listening knows it, And it's just a really fine line to interfere with an adult child and, you know, put your will on them versus letting them be you. And that's a really tough line to walk. I feel like we've walked it for, you know, for me, 16 and a half years. His mom and dad for 29, so almost 29. So it was tough. It was tough for all of us to figure out how to let him be him. And he was a very cool spirit, very wonderful young man.
And it's so personal, and thank you for telling his story and your story with him as well.
Because we both have kids, you know. I mean,
yeah.
So Ed, it's very, I mean, it's just to hear, I mean, it's very close to home for almost everybody because, you know, there's have kids, so yeah.
You know, and you probably have had kids, then your kids are younger. Well, you know, I know, John, you know, your daughter's is
23.
To one of my
is my oldest.
Age. She's my second son's second youngest son's age. He's 24, but you know that they all had friends that had to be on, you know, medicine for ADHD or medicine for, you know, bipolar or whatever. They medicate kids so early in school these days, and that
yep.
really puts a stigma on so many of those kids, and that's kind of what Ryan battled with his whole grade school career, and you know he just refused as an adult to take anything because he was so misdiagnosed and misjudged, and you know I don't doubt for a minute he needed counseling and medication, but I wish he would have gone in as an adult, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, you know, I guess that's the warning sign I would give you, Jeff, that I hope parents are talking to their kids as they get into adulthood and really encourage them to get help, and that's not a weakness.
No, that's wonderful. That is. Have you found, since you're a writer, is it help to write, especially when you're experiencing such tragedy in your personal life?
I have to be honest, I have not even tried since April 20th. The weird part about it, and my publisher or publicist might cringe, but the reason I picked up writing was when my first son died, because it's really hard to grieve when somebody just made a mistake. So in my first few novels, I really picked up writing at that point, because you have to get rid of that anger. And the anger was, of course, I killed off every doctor in the first couple novels, and it made absolutely no sense. But it wasn't that doctor's fault. He just made a mistake, literally to the point of just forgetting to wash his hands. It was that silly of a mistake. So, and he apologized to me for it, and that's what you want, is just human being to human being. That's all I wanted, was an apology, because nothing else could make it right. And he did, but now I've stopped writing. So it's going to be interesting here. This is kind of a change for me. So I don't know if I can ever write again. I hope I can. I hope something comes of this. I hope I'm not just killing my career here. But you know, some things are more important, and it's just I'll have to figure that out. Because you know, Jeff and John, you've probably both met people that, when you're out and about and talking, I found this with book clubs. I was very sensitive when I'd have a book club where somebody's family member was murdered, and I write about it so casually. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, how do you sit in a book club with me as an author here? And they always used to tell me, well, because your books give me resolution. And I didn't have resolution with my sister or my mother or whoever, you know, and you're going, I don't know, I just couldn't. I don't know if I could imagine that. So I'm struggling a little bit, quite frankly, and I know you two aren't here to be counselors for me, but I have not written one word since April 20th. So this is going to be interesting to me, to see what God has intended. I guess that's the whole point here, is I think it's His way and not my way, and I have to just believe.
Yeah, I mean, it... You know, because this is uncharted territory for you, of course. And so you have just no idea how, I guess, you're going to respond. Now, of course, we all hope that you respond and come back out with some more work. And I guess the question kind of lends to it is that if you decide to write again, would you even have any topics that would be taboo, or would you just go back and kind of write the kind of books that you have been writing, or do you really have any idea about what you would even get into?
Well, I don't know. I can tell you I'm very sensitive right now, and getting ready for Thriller Fest, which is in July here. I always like to read, you know, like my fellow board members on ITW, I read their books, or I'll read the panelists' books ahead of time on who I'm moderating for their panels. And it seems like there's a very strong theme of suicide in a lot of books right now, and that's it's hard for me to finish, and it's hard for me to separate them and understand it's just fiction. It's not real. It's, you know, it's just fiction. But when you know when you're having to deal with it, that's harder for me. It's just tough. It's tougher to. It's tough, you know.
Yeah.
I honestly do. It is uncharted territory, and I don't know if, shoot, I might end up writing about unicorns and lollipops because that's a lot easier for me to wrap my brain around it, at least these
J.K.
days.
J.K. Rowling made a hell of a career out of writing about that shit, didn't she?
Exactly. It might not be such thriller and
but
mystery.
It's
like,
a bad idea.
Like people
we would
you know,
read
so,
it, guaranteed.
Yeah, we would read. So let's talk about let's kind of talk about your books here, and let's talk about the Liv Bergen series, and kind of give everybody an overview of who Liv Bergen is, and kind of the books that you wrote, and you know if you want to start with your last one, Jacob's Descent, and kind of go until then, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'd love it. You know, I've written six in the series, and Jacob's Descent just came out. And what's funny about it is my books are
suspense publishing. That's what's funny about it.
It's so weird. Every one of my books is so different. But this last one, Jacob's Descent, if I told you it's about Deadwood, South Dakota, and it's all about priests, I think people would go, what?
What?
You know, what about Wild Bill Hickok? And what about, it's actually, the sixth book is a very funny story behind it, is I don't like to write about nonfiction. I don't like to write about true stories. And when you become more and more known as a mystery writer, a lot of people tell you they're real stories and want you to write about them. Well, I had a priest come to me and said, please, 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 we love your series. Please write about this priest that was killed in Deadwood, South Dakota 100 years ago because he's up for sainthood. And I said, being raised Catholic, I'm no longer Catholic, I said, no, you know, Father, I can't write about that because this would be a bad deal. I mean, I just can't. I'll botch up the nonfiction. So he died, and I thought, phew, okay, I'm out of that one. And I can't tell you his name because he took some stuff out of the rectory and gave it to me to write about it.
Oh.
So I thought, well, okay, good, because, you know, he died of old age, and that was wonderful, but I'm glad I didn't have to write it. Well, then my godfather, who was also a priest, came to me and said, Sam, you really literally have to write this book because all the priests in the area really need this story told. And he was my godfather, but he ended up dying, and I thought, okay, I told him no, too. Well, then the Monsignor came to me, and he said, I heard Father So-and-so and Father Birdsall said that that you would write this book about Father Belknap. And I said, no, Monsignor. And I've known him since I was a little girl. So I was like, no, Monsignor.
You better have said yes, though.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I can still say no, right? I can still say no. So I said no, and he said, well, just so you know, I'm in hospice. And I was like, and he goes, nobody knows that. And I'm like, oh, great. So you're putting the guilt trip on me. And he goes, yep. And so I did write this book. And I wrote it for him, and he was the only one that read it before, you know, my normal publishing series or process, which I give to book clubs and then I give to my publisher. But he read it, and he loved it. And it was funny. I made him play two roles, and I used his real name. But the funny part is there was this mystery of a priest that was killed 100 years ago in Deadwood, South Dakota, in the wild times of the settling there. And it made me study the Ku Klux Klan, because that was one of the theories, is that the Ku Klux Klan killed him. And that was one theory. Anyway, and I was like, why would there be the Ku Klux Klan in South Dakota? I mean, think about it. You know, because the way I was raised is Ku Klux Klan was all about, you know, black and white issues. Well, that's not at all what it was. After World War One in 1911, a lot of the priests were killed around the world, and Ku Klux Klan actually were killing many Irish Catholic priests because they thought they were too strong of allegiance to the Pope rather than the president, and they did not want to have another world war. So who knew? You know, I learned I learned so much in researching this book, and so it turned out to be a really fun mystery for me. Really fun. So that's what Jacob's Descent is all about. I didn't actually try to go back and solve that crime, but I did make it a more modern-day twist and pulled in that history, real history from the past.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I had fun.
I have this vision of you taking communion and them slipping you pieces of paper while...
it really was kind of slipped under his cassock. And I'm going, are you kidding me?
Oh my Lord!
Know about this? No. So
yeah, and you know how they give pieces of bread? It was actually a fortune cookie that you opened up, and you're like, really, really, more pieces of paper?
And I'm like, are you serious? This is the story. So what was really fun about it is it was just you look at Deadwood, South Dakota, so differently, and it was still in that same era of, you know, Calamity Jane and Wild Bill Hickok, but most people, you know, turn to those characters, and it was really fun to see the characters that they wanted me to write about, which was totally different. So it, for me, it was fun, and that's not normally, I don't usually write, you know, when priests tell me they've read my books, I'm always like, shit, you know, because I'm like, oh, did I swear to a priest? Because my books are not Christian fiction, you know, it's like there's, anyway, so I'm always really nervous when they say they've read my book, but none of them are. I do have the main character has a fat sister who's a nun who loves Chubby Chipmunk chocolates, which is real. So at Thriller Fest, I'm bringing. So Jeff, you get some. John, you're not there this year, so you don't get any.
Oh,
but I always
man,
bring.
I
always bring Chubby Chipmunks.
Not saving you any.
Everybody gets Chubby Chipmunks from Denver, South Dakota.
Bring them to PNWA with you, Jeff.
Nope, not gonna happen.
He might sneak an extra tin under his cassock for you.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, I will not be at Thriller Fest this year. We'll be missing it, so it'll be the same.
Well, you got to give Shannon a hug for me, because it really will be so different without you.
Yeah, we'll be there next year. We did, like, the 3 years, 1 year off, and then we kind of do the 3 years, and then we just kind of take a break to just kind of, you know, refresh it and do whatever. We couldn't take another of those 50 pitches again, because, man, that's just grueling. I guess it's grueling.
It is. It really is. And we've had, I don't know if you've heard, John, but we've had the quickest fill-in and more requests this year. So PitchFest has been full for a couple of months, and we have the most editors from publishing houses that we've ever had. We have Torforge there and Kensington again, you know, Amazon's Waterfall Press and Torteen, a lot of teen. And then Bantam Dell.
Oh, so you're actually getting more publishers than
yes.
actual agents.
Yes, I mean, you and
Hold on. A lot of our listeners might be going, what is PitchFest?
Oh.
What is this exactly?
Oh, okay.
So,
well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this? Why don't we talk about that after the break? If Sandra can stay on for another segment, we can kind of get into that a little bit. You want to do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay. So we got a couple minutes before
we
hit the break. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. My question to you is, why a series? We talk a lot about series on the show here. Why did you decide you wanted to write a series?
I think a series is so much harder to write than a single standalone, because you really have to remember the development of your characters over time and bring characters back. But I really didn't intend to do a series. What I did is I had written 10 novels ahead before I ever got published, and they weren't in a series. When I met with the publisher on In the Belly of Jonah, they wanted to make this character survive. And almost every book I want to kill her off, because it's just your natural tendency to end the book with the main character dying, right? So they don't like that. So I had to rewrite all those books. So yeah, series wasn't my intention, but it's working well.
Yeah. Well, obviously, yes.
I'm pretty lucky.
So this is a good place to kind of hit a. So what we'll do is we'll take a little break, and I gotta pay some bills, so I gotta read some stuff off. You two go ahead and talk off the air a little bit, and then we'll be right back in about 5 minutes. Sound good?
That sounds good.
All right, here we go. So let's do a little bit of this paying the bills, and let's let you guys know that right now Janet Cole writes what she knows, the world of big law lawyers and clients. Her new book is a mystery called The Smell of Money. In the book, she pairs a disgruntled law partner with a contract killer having a midlife crisis. They have a common client, an old woman whose ruthlessness includes her need to kill opponents. And they meet when the killer's next target is the lawyer's daughter. You can find the book now on Amazon or in your bookstore. Also, please visit coleslaw.com. That's Cole with a K. Also, of course, all of our shows here are brought to you by Kensington Books this year. Make sure you check out kensingtonbooks.com. New book coming out by Daniel Palmer. Kevin O'Brien's coming out. Annie's going to be on the show. Lisa Jackson, which we'll try to get on. Mary Burton. They have a ton of fantastic authors. A great new cozy line they got out there. So check out kensingtonbooks.com and see what you can find. Also, Betty Jean Craig has a new book out called Fairfield's Auction. It's the latest book in her Witherstone mystery series. Visit BettyJeanCraig.com for more information, and that's Craig with an E. Check out the 2015 New Mexico winner for Best Book, and that's Robert Cadera, and that was for Red Gold. And his second installment is Get Lost. It's a McKenna series. You can visit Amazon right now to order Get Lost, and that's Robert Cadera. Also, Crooked Lane Books wants to know if you're ready for a thrill. So check out their books, which includes Leslie Karst, Anna Carlisle, Wendy Corsi Staub, and more, by visiting crookedlanebooks.com. Impossible to Put Down, says best-selling author Louise Duncan about Annabelle Lee, and that's the latest book by Mike Napa. Visit coffeeandhillseries.com for more information. And coffee is C-O-F-F-E-Y. And lastly, Jeffrey Deaver and Lee Child agree that Hostage Taker by Stephanie Pintoff is a winner. We agreed with them, and we put Hostage Taker on the list for one of the best books of 2015. So check out Hostage Taker now by going to Amazon.com. I'm going to take a little break. Got to get something to drink, and then we will be right back here with the second half of Sandra Brandon, along with some other stuff. The question, and then bring up a question, and we'll talk about it and talk about some other books. So here we go.
Breakdown. It's
back after the break, of course. Again, we want to thank you all for listening, however, wherever, whenever you listen to the show. You can download us from iTunes. Go on there, subscribe to the podcast. You get all the shows, not just Beyond the Cover, but Crime and Science Radio, Inside Edition, and Story Blenders that we have going on. So,
and One-on-One.
Sandra, again, and which one? What?
One-on-One.
One-on-One's going to go away.
One-on-One.
I just don't. One-on-One was with Partners in Crime, but I'm going to discontinue that one because I found out that a lot of the people who do One-on-One, I also do on Inside Edition, so I'm just going to maybe make that more of a two-hour show instead of a one-hour show, and that way it frees me up on a Sunday so I can lounge around nude because,
TMI.
Hey,
exactly.
That's what this. I should change. We should just change the name of the show to TMI because TMI. I'm telling you, I got a bad story that I could tell everybody, but I won't do that because you know that'll put you in the same zone. But we were kind of talking a little bit about Thriller Fest and Pitch Fest. Now, of course, I've talked a lot about Thriller Fest and the conference, but I've never really gotten into I guess what Pitch Fest is. So, Sandra, why don't you kind of let everybody know exactly what Pitch Fest is?
I would love to because it has really – Thriller Fest, I attribute a lot of my career career success to Thriller Fest.
Uh-huh. I got you down.
No,
don't
really.
I?
because I went to Thriller Fest in 2010 with my when I first launched In the Belly of Jonah. But I write two books a year, so I've been trying to sell other standalones and other books throughout this time as well, and I didn't know the industry. I truly understand I didn't know the industry, but the more I learn from at Thriller Fest, the more I realize I don't know what I don't know. So what mm-hmm. Thriller Fest is all about, it's the fundraising mechanism for International Thriller Writers Organization, and there's 3,700 members to ITW across 43 countries. So this is really the thriller suspense genre getting together worldwide to try to help other writers. So Thriller Fest, it's three components. One is a whole chunk of time dedicated to helping writers get better and authors get better at writing. One chunk is for fans, and that's over Friday, Saturday, to meet these wonderful authors. And in between, sandwiched in between, is what's called Pitch Fest. And I'm actually the volunteer for that. I'm an ITW board member, but I actually volunteer to be the director of Pitch Fest, where it's really matchmaking. You spend the whole afternoon with 60 agents, editors, and sometimes producers with hundreds of writers, and they come pitch whoever they want. And we have three-minute timers at all the desks so the writers don't dominate an agent's time. And we have wonderful room captains like Jeff there that make sure that happens. And it's so much fun, John, because we get people like you, we get people like Kensington, we have Gary Goldstein, and of course the wonderful Michaela Hamilton, who I think has been there every year, an acquiring editor, so that a writer who has never been published might get to meet a Michaela Hamilton with Kensington, and she says, yes, I'll buy that book, and she doesn't even have an agent, or he doesn't have an agent, which is wonderful. So it's a face-to-face, I want to meet you, and I want to hear your pitch in 3 minutes. So you have to have we don't have requirements, but we do have strong recommendations, and we ask that people have their manuscript done, completed, polished, edited, ready to go, and then their pitch is ready to go as well.
Say that again. Say that last part again.
Well, we don't force them
edited.
To do this, but we strongly recommend you finish the manuscript and actually have it polished and edited, professionally edited if you can. And that's always tricky because as a writer, I was always told, do not, under any circumstances, hire a book doctor. Well, that's true. That's a bad name for people who are scamming, I understand. But you really do need to hire a professional editor, not a family member, not your sister, because, of course, they're going to say it's fabulous.
This is not American Idol where you think you can sing but you can't.
Right? You definitely want that Simon Cowell, and you want to pay that Simon Cowell to help you get all the bugs worked out. But, Thriller Fest has done a great job marrying that up. Like, they have one whole day of Mastercraft where you get to spend an entire day with an author like, you know, David Morrell, Rambo's daddy, who will spend, and he's a professor, so he'll spend all day with you, and he'll take your 10 pages along with 9 other students and just tell you what's exactly wrong with it or what's right with it. And I love that. It's really authors helping writers.
Yeah.
What, one of
the course,
things
the biggest
I
thing
do...
is they have to actually take the advice and use it, too. I mean, that's always important. Sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, as a door captain, one of the things I try and do is help the people pitching relax and just be calm. I do remember one year there was a guy pitching, and he was an ex-cop. And he said, well, yeah, now that you mention it, I'm not being shot at. So, like, yeah, you're not being shot at.
And the funny thing is, and you know what's funny is because I look at it and I'm like, it's just me. I mean, why would you ever be nervous to talk to me? I'm like one of the easiest going. I mean, people sit down, I see them shaking, and I took one lady's hand one time and I said, relax. I go, it's literally just me. And I am nobody special, and I am nobody important. Just talk to me like you're just talking to somebody. I mean, that's just what it is. It's like, I'm not important. I'm not a special person. I'm on the other side of the table, but that's all I am. That's really all it is. So just be calm and relaxed. And the biggest thing is be yourself. Don't try to say stuff that you think we want to hear or anything, because if you start trying to guess that, you're going to guess wrong almost every single time. The biggest thing that, and I would just say from that side of the table, the biggest thing that we have, almost every pitch we hear besides the cyborg on the moon controlling women's menstrual cycles, almost, and that's a real pitch, people, that really, almost every pitch sounds good. You can make any story sound interesting, like, oh, okay, that sounds good. But I always say, but let's see how you wrote it. So that's where the proof is in the pudding. It's kind of like the Food Network star and this Top Chef. You can have a shit personality at the beginning, but if you cook really good food, you're going to make it a really long way. So if you can write really, really good, even if your plot is just a little off, but you really write good, you're going to go a really long way.
Exactly. And not only do you have to have a good pitch, but you have to have that great book. But it also has to be timed with the market, which you have no control over. So you can't give up.
None. Zero.
You just can't give up. You have to keep trying and keep trying and keep trying. This is a persistence game. It's a numbers game, and it's a duration game. You really have to have the wherewithal to stay in it. You know, John, you were saying, I don't understand why people get so nervous. I was. I was so nervous. The first year I pitched, I thought I was going to die of a heart attack. I was like, oh, my gosh, because you hold my future in your hands. And the second year, what was really funny is the second year, I just listened. I thought, you know what, I'm going to sign up and go, what do you guys like? You know, I started completely different, which I've got 3 minutes with you. I want to know, what's the most exciting book you've had this year? And I started interviewing them. And what was nice is Writer's Digest asked me to do that, you know, to get a sense of what the idea was, you know, what is Pitch Fest about. And so it gave me an opportunity, just 3 minutes, to talk to agents and say, what is it you're looking for? And it calmed me down so much that the next year I came, they all remembered me, and that's how I ended up being the volunteer Pitch Fest director. So, because I cared more about them at that point. I'm like, do you need coffee? Do you need water? Do you need aspirin to get through this? And it was fun. Then it got to be fun for me because I want to matchmake. It's not about me anymore. I want to matchmake. I want John Robb to get the best writer that fits with him. And I want Jeff Ayers to write that next great book and put him with the best agent or editor out there. And that's how I feel about it. But it's a passion for me, so I get excited.
How did you get your agent?
You know, it was. I love my agent. John Talbot was the senior editor for Tom Clancy, and it was in that third year that I was like, nobody was standing at his table, and I sat down. I said, John, do they not know who you are? And he goes, I don't know. And I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe nobody's standing in your line. And he said, well, tell me where you are. Last year you asked me questions. Where are you in writing that book? And I went, well, I finished it. And he goes, well, send it to me. And I sent it to him. And the next morning he said, don't talk to anybody else. I want that. So it's like, how does that happen? I didn't even, it was kind of accidental. I wasn't even pitching that year. So I think good things happen sometimes, and you're just going, well, two worlds collided, and I love him to pieces. But it wasn't timed well with the market. And I think, unfortunately, I'm the only one he's never been able to sell. So I guess I'm on the record books. but I love it.
But,
the thing, too, is,
and one thing that you did that was important, you sent it right away.
I did.
I've had people 4 months after, and they say, oh, we talked in Thriller Fest, and I knew you would be bombarded, so I wanted to wait. And I'm like, I don't even remember you anymore. No idea.
That frustrates me because I will tell you, John, it was worse last year from the writers that I heard about. They'd say, well, we haven't even finished. We just didn't tell them that. And I'm like, don't frustrate these agents. They won't listen to you again. Don't frustrate these editors. They won't listen to you again. But people just don't take our advice anymore. And I think they want
to know that you can
perform.
They're so excited to be able to do. Well, I got a question for both of you guys. I kind of brought this up to Jeff, too. And this was about a book that I was reading. And I will not mention the author, I'm not mention who it is, but it was a very, very big best-selling author writing with somebody else. And I couldn't get through the book. I did not care for it at all, and so I put it down. And I was wondering, and I said, I wonder if, and I'll ask, and so I'll ask you and throw it out there as a conversation piece, if you think a best-selling author, when they write with somebody like that, and they write a book that is subpar, does that hurt the best-selling author? Because everybody's going to think that they wrote the book. People still think Tom Clancy's alive, even though Mark Greene and Grant Blackwood are writing the books.
Right.
And Clive Cussler does no longer write anymore. I mean, he just kind of edits some stuff, but he doesn't write anything. Do you think that that would hurt the best-selling author if they put out stuff that what I felt was subpar and was actually unreviewable? Whoever wants to take it, go ahead.
I will tell you, I think in the industry, John, I think the only way that a lot of writers can get sales going is with co-writing with those bestsellers. The reason those bestsellers do it, I'm sure, is because as they're aging, they need, it's like passing on a business that is really you, so you can't really pass it on. So, I can't get into the minds of Clive or Tom Clancy or Vince Flynn, any of those guys that have writers now that keep going. I can't ever do that. For some reason, that's just, I would rather not sell another book.
But the author I'm talking about is actually still alive and still very prominent, young guy, and still writing.
Ooh.
But now writing with a co-author. So I'm not even talking about someone who's either too old to write or passed away and they just picked up their brand. I'm talking about someone who's still writing and is doing this.
Wow, that would be tough, wouldn't you think? I don't know, Jeff, what do you think?
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I got to be honest.
He knows the book I'm talking about. That's the thing. He knows the book I'm talking about.
I'm in agreement with you. How do you say this? I think that it hurts sales, but I don't think it hurts the brand.
Interesting.
So are you done with the book?
Yes, and I did not like it, and it was the main character I didn't like, but.
Jeff, I'm going to tell Sandra. I'm going to tell Sandra real quick off air. So keep talking.
Okay. Yeah. Mute. So I think the sales will diminish because of the co-authorship, especially if the book's not as good. But the next time that author publishes a book under their own name, I think it's not going to hurt them at all. It's all about the brand, and people will maybe think it's a fluke, or maybe just, because like they know the name, they're just going to keep buying it. So having a co-author, it's an opportunity for that person to have a book out more often. You guys back? Guess not. It's an interesting conundrum. Look at James Patterson. James Patterson has a whole bunch of co-authors, a whole bunch of different series going on. So you guys back now,
James Patterson. I love James Patterson, and I know that I'm not supposed to say that because so many authors.
Why?
You know, don't, but I love James Patterson. I love all of his books, and I don't like all of the co-written books, but, you know, like Daniel X is one of my favorites, and, you know, of course I love the Alex Cross, the true James Patterson, but, you know, I don't know. I love everybody's books usually, so it's hard
well,
for me to
let me ask you,
like.
Sandra, and this is to John. What do you think of what James Patterson is doing now with the shorter books?
I just interviewed an author who is going to be writing. Her name is a blank, but I just interviewed her on the radio show, and she's going to be writing a short with James Patterson. I think it's good for books anytime you can get people to read. I think there's nothing. I think that's great. The one thing that I think that should happen, though, is this might be James' idea, but I still think that the credence needs to go to the author who wrote the book. And so as long as they're getting the credit for doing it and not just somebody just saying, oh, yeah, James is putting his – I think the problem with James is that he's putting his name on too many things, and I think that it's now just clouding. I think people are just glazed over at the fact, like, oh, James Patterson has another book out, like once a month. I mean, it would be like if you had a band that just kept throwing out a single every once. I think after a while, I think you just kind of, maybe I'm wrong, but don't you just kind of gloss it over, like, oh, okay, he's got another one out, whatever. You know what
Bill
I mean?
Bill number one every time.
You know,
and these
and,
are called
and,
book
yeah,
shots.
Yeah, because it sells, but that doesn't mean it's good.
You know,
I've never,
I will
I've
tell
never
you,
been under
somebody
the,
who's somebody who's beaten that. I don't know if you've read Lee Child's recent one, Make Me. I love reading Lee Child's because it's like my macaroni and cheese. You can always go back to it, and it's predictable for me, and I love that. But the Make Me is probably his best book yet. So he just got better, in my opinion. It's like, what happened there? I mean, it is his best book yet. It's twisty. It's a tough current subject. It's very well done, in my opinion. So some of them surprise you every once in a while too. You know that I don't know. I thought he did a great
job. Well, yeah, but and now here's the thing: if he wrote that with somebody else, what would you then think?
I would think the new person brought that to him because it was so different than
right.
what his normal style is. But I'm glad he didn't, because I'm glad to see him grow. That makes me comfortable. You know, it's like, good, that means I can get better too if I work hard enough like he has. Does that make sense?
I think all writers want that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I
finally just got in the mail, and maybe I had it before, I don't know. But I'm going to start with Clive and Boyd's, The Emperor's Revenge, Jeff? Is that the actual name of it?
Yeah, that came out today officially.
And
yeah,
Boyd
I'm going to review that one.
Is it good? Boyd Morrison is the person I took his place as Pitch Fest director. So he was the Pitch Fest director before I took over as the volunteer. So Boyd's a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
And the book is true.
Tyler Locke series is fabulous.
Yep.
But the one thing that he has said is that writing with Clive has not upped his book sales on his other books.
Really?
It's not really done a lot for him. No, it has not really done a lot for him.
People think
because,
it's Clive.
Right. And the thing, we had Mark Greene here about a couple months ago on the show. He was saying that when he was at a book signing, people literally came up and wanted him to autograph like their hat because they thought they were talking to Tom Clancy.
Oh,
now, Tom's
wow.
been dead for like 5 or 6 years.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Mark, at least, you know, he still writes his other series. Boyd no longer writes his other series. He just writes with Clive now. But, yeah, I mean, see, this is what fans don't understand. And this is the same thing I always talk about with music in the music group Kiss. You know, you see the spaceman and you see the cat, but that's no longer Ace Frehley and Peter Criss. Those are now characters. They've now just made them into characters. And when Gene and Paul leave, they're going to do the same thing. So I don't think people really realize that that's not who's writing the book. It's really the co-author doing a lot of the work. So if you like the way that story is, you should probably go pick up the other stories that they wrote because
right.
you're going to get the same sense.
Right, right. That's a tough one. And do you sense, I got to ask you too, do you think that's, that's duping the reader? Do you think they, if they don't know that it's not them, or they don't know that Tom Clancy has died, or Vince Flynn, or any of them that are continuing to write, do you feel like, I will tell you, I have met some fans that said, well, I thought he was still alive. I thought that's what I was buying. They they don't know that there's somebody co-writing it. They don't understand what that written with so-and-so means.
Well, what about ghostwriting as well?
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of authors.
We can't let that cat out of the bag, but it happens.
Yep, absolutely.
Wow.
We know.
I'm ghostwriting a novel now. I can't tell you who it is, but it's absolutely fascinating to me.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And isn't there... And Jeff, you need to tell your story about someone that you met. You don't have to mention names, but how many number one New York Times books have they written for an author that you thought was somebody else?
I know it was at least two, but they couldn't tell me which ones they were.
Right.
And
that if you knew their name would blow the fucking doors off of your mind.
Wow.
It's an author we've all heard of.
Oh, all heard of. Shit, we probably all have it. We could probably look at our bookshelf and see it right now.
Yeah.
That's probably true. Yep.
And, you know, I think there was one author that did it right. I think maybe it was Clancy with Mark Greene. It said Tom Clancy and the thing, but it said written by Mark Greene. Instead of just having his name there, I think it literally said written by. And I think the important thing.
Yeah,
so at least people know. But, you know, they still put the Tom Clancy name, just like Sidney Sheldon, and they're going to do with Vince Flynn. I'm under the rule, and Jeff agrees with me on this one. When the main author passes away, that's it. Game over, finish, you're done. There's no more.
Right.
That's
right.
It. Unless you're going to put your name on the book and say it's a pneumophile or have the same font or have the same kind of thing, but then it's no longer Clive Cussler. It's The Pneumophiles, written by Boyd Morrison, or he did The Oregon Files, whatever. You take Clive's name off the book, and you just put the title of what it is, A Dirk Pritt Adventure by whatever, whoever writes it.
And that won't happen, because the publisher knows no one's going to pick it up.
Not.
They have to see Clive's name on it.
You know how they found that out? Because no one gave a shit about whoever she wrote under was a casual vacancy. It actually got bad reviews, but it was J.K. Rowling. And no one
picked up
until they said,
Robert Galbraith.
This is J.K. Rowling.
Hmm.
You know, but this is why she's writing another Harry Potter book, because she's really a one-hit wonder. It's a hell of a hit, but she's a one-hit wonder. But she can't write anything.
You were
going to
say something, Sandra, sorry.
No,
yeah,
And I just have to ask, Jeff, if you're ghostwriting, you've also written your own books, like Long Overdue?
That's correct.
And you also wrote, you co-authored in with a couple, didn't you? Like, In His Name, I saw that, is that the same Jeff Ayers?
That's me. It was supposed to be a ghost-written nonfiction memoir, but the folks I did it for decided to stick my name on the cover, which was very nice.
I'm thrilled. So that was kind of ghost writing, but you actually chose to, or they chose to have your name right on it?
Yes. One that will be out soon, you will not see my name anywhere.
Nowhere.
Yeah,
I
want to
get
see.
Jeff really drunk one night and have him fucking tell me who it is, because I'm dying to know. I got to tell you. The secret would be safe with me, but I just want to get really drunk and have him tell me one night.
Jeff, no, it won't. Don't listen to him. It's not safe with John.
Well, I would never say who it was. I would never, ever defy that confidence. You tell me something, it will stay with me in forever. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, you're right, I think it cheats the reader if the reader thinks they're picking something up and that's not what it is. I think that that's not fair. I think that you should let them know, because if it's a movie, you can tell it's a different actor playing James Bond. You know you're getting James Bond, but you're not getting Sean Connery, you're getting Daniel Craig, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I think if you're saying you're getting Dirk Pitt, just say who else is writing it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I really don't, but I understand that the publisher wants to make their cash and they want to keep, cashing in those checks. But I think that there should be more of a disclosure maybe on the back of the book or on the jacket or something that says this book was written entirely by so-and-so. You know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, question for you, Sandra, because we're almost out of time.
Make it quick.
This is unbelievable.
We're coming to the end.
What advice would you have for someone coming into PitchFest this year?
Oh, I hope that if you're thinking about trying to find an agent or editor, sign up for PitchFest right away. Just type in www.thrillerfest.com and sign up. But the advice I would have for them is exactly what John said. Be you. They are looking for unique voices, and every writer in this world has a unique voice from everybody else. So be you. Talk like you would write. Write like you would talk. And those agents and editors will pay attention to you.
Well, Sandra, much love coming from Jeff and I. We want to thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate the conversation. Of course, if you ever need anything, you always know our numbers and never hesitate to call. One of these days, Shannon and I will actually take you up on that, and we will come to South Dakota, and we are going to see and we are going to experience that. Because, you know, we live in Minnesota, so it's not that far off. But,
We'd love to have you. And, Jeff, you and your wife have to come, too. It would be fun. We'll get you pheasant hunting. Have you eat some buffalo. Come on,
dude, put me on a horse just one more time, and that would be it. Yeah.
You got to pet my llamas.
Yes, and don't forget, and everybody, visit SandraBrannon.com, SandraBrannon.com for all the books in the Liv Bergen series, too.
Thank you. All right.
All right, Sandra, you have a good one. We will talk with you later.
You bet. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Jeff, we got about a minute and a half, so we're going to roll this up. It's been a fabulous talk. Can't thank Sandra enough for coming on. Emotionally charged interview, like I said. Tears over here on these eyes. I know that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just glad she's doing okay. And
yeah.
For folks who are coming to Pitch Fest at Thriller Fest this year, make sure you say hi to both of us.
Absolutely. You won't see me there, but if you're coming to PNWA, I just signed up, so I'll be there. So I'll maybe see you in Seattle. And again, never ever, you know, and I know it's difficult, but if you're talking to me, you never have to be nervous. Ever. Just come up and say, hey, I'm a Dodger fan, and we'll get along famously right there.
And if you said that to me, I would know you were nuts, so there you go.
Exactly. That's how we work. All right, Jeff, you have a good one, my man, and we will see you guys on in a couple weeks. You know, check out Twitter, check out everything that we got. We'll load it up when we have new guests and what we got coming on. So until next time, everybody, like we say, keep reading. Good night.
Good night, everybody.